Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Action Park Media.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. Today on the show, I welcome Blair White. Blair is an American YouTuber and political commentator, and I want to thank Blair for having a safe and open conversation with me about topics of our time that I have found myself confused about. I also want to be clear that there was no intent to offend or upset anyone or any group. Please enjoy. You can find Miss Blair White on Instagram at Miss Blair White. Blair White, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, this has been a place to have conversations mostly about weight loss. That's been like the primary focus, but I do talk all aspects about bodies. And one of the things I experienced for my entire life was a sense of wrongness with my body that I then worked very hard to change. And that feeling didn't just evaporate. And so I would love to hear your perspective on that or your experience with that. I'm very interested.
Yeah. So I am no stranger to body issues. I'm transgender, and that comes along with gender dysphoria, which my earliest memories in life consisted of this feeling of gender dysphoria, of this. It's such a hard thing to explain, although I guess someone who did struggle with body issues can relate to an extent. Just a misalignment with how I was being perceived by the outside world and myself, and then even further, the way I would view myself and having to come to terms with I was incorrectly viewing myself both physically, mentally, spiritually, all that. So I would say around 4 or 5 were the earliest remnants of like, oh, something's like weird. I feel different than everyone around me. And it had a lot to do with the way I looked, but also everything, because gender is so much more than just how you look. It's like, you know, your name. It's your the way people speak about you, speak to you, your expectations. I remember being in preschool, and that's kind of the earliest where they separate you by gender to an extent. It's like I remember there was like little blue lockers for the boys and their backpacks and the girls. And I remember feeling weird that I was putting myself in the blue and the boys, but also feeling weird that I felt weird about it. I was like, this feels weird, but it's also weird that I would feel weird about it. So that's obviously a very superficial manifestation of it. But the older I got, the more intense these feelings became, especially hitting puberty. That was when I was like, oh, yeah, something's been wrong forever, and it will continue to be wrong, most likely. And then once I was 18, I was like, okay, I need to just do something about this. So I looked into, like, what it is, basically. And there's no cure for it. There's no pill you can take to get rid of it. There's no conversion therapy that was tried for centuries. So the best bet currently is transition. And I went for it. I didn't know how I was going to pay for it. I didn't know what it was, the end result was going to be, but I knew I couldn't live the way I was expected to live up until that point. And it opened up my life. Like, I don't have a sob story. It's like it made me happy. I'm living my best life, so.
And is there any remnants of that malaise or whatever feeling you – because I do think language can be inadequate to really – I don't know how to – I guess the words body dysmorphia accurately apply to how I feel most of the time. Like, I look in the mirror and I can see my ribs, but I feel very fat still. Like, this doesn't make sense, right? And so basically I'm asking, is that gone? Did it evaporate?
So body dysmorphia and gender dysphoria are different, and I can say that because I've experienced both, because I've struggled with an eating disorder as well, and we'll get into that. And that came from working on camera. That was a whole other cause. But it didn't fully go away. Transition wasn't a cure. It was a huge aid, and it opened up my life in so many positive ways, and I wouldn't be able to live the life I do if I hadn't done it. But I would say maybe once every 3 months, I will feel that feeling of like, of, it's so hard to explain, of inaccurately viewing myself in the mirror. So for example, one of the surgeries that I got was, it's going to sound crazy if you're not in the trans world, but I got my forehead done. Okay. So biological males have a ridge right here. So you have it. Every male has it, pretty much.
I don't know about this, but I'm feeling okay.
It's basically like from the side profile, there is a ridge for biological males that isn't present for most females. They have more flat. So I got that sawed down, which sounds brutal because it is.
To reveal the ridge?
No, to get rid of the ridge.
To get rid of the ridge.
To flatten it.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes,
yeah,
got it.
Which sounds nuts if you're not in the trans world, but I wouldn't take it back. It was a great surgery. But I occasionally will like see it in the mirror, even though I know.
Like a phantom limb.
Yeah, like a phantom ridge on my forehead where I will be like, okay, I know objectively the surgeon sawed it down. It is literally not there. Same, I got my nose done. Sometimes I still see a big nose when in reality my nose is actually pretty small now. Like any smaller and we might be getting into some bad territory. And that's where you get into plastic surgery, even not even just trans, just people in general, they can go overboard. You have to really learn how to stop yourself and see yourself in a more objective lens when you start doing surgeries. So it doesn't completely go away, you know? That's, I guess, a roundabout way of answering your question, but
no, that answers it. It's also helpful to me because I think I come to the place where it's this a mantra of be objective, stop being emotional, stop being just in your mind and reacting. Take a minute, really look, and be able to see differences that are objectively there. And I mean, I can't say that I have the same self-loathing that I had 200 pounds ago, right? It's not the same, but then it'll creep up like a shadow or like a fog, and I have to stop and look and go, knock it off.
That's almost exactly what it's like for me. It's like I'll just be living my life and be happy with the decisions I made, then all of a sudden it's like it's just there.
Yeah.
And it kind of knocks me out for a day, honestly. So when I was in the thick of feeling dysphoria in relates to my gender, I wasn't able to function as a person. I wasn't able to go to the grocery store. I remember very distinctly I had a boyfriend at the time before I transitioned, and like we were supposed to go grocery shopping, and I woke up fine that day. I was like, yeah, we'll go to the store, whatever. And about an hour before, that shadow crept in, and I was like, I can't go. And I would find the most specific, stupid reasons why. Because in grocery stores, it sounds psycho, but I know that you can relate to this to an extent. It's like there's like overhead lighting. And at the time, I had like that ridge. And I'd be like, I don't want people to see the shadows in my face. They're going to come from having like this brow bone or whatever, which sounds so crazy and it's so in the weeds with it. But that's how it is. Like you get down to very specific little things.
Yeah.
And they're irrational to everyone around you. But I do know, like, there is an objectively large change that I've made. Like,
right.
I don't look even remotely like the person I used to. I look at pictures and I'm like, that's a different human being. You know, my own family, I've like literally walked past my family I've like visited my hometown and walked past one of my cousins that didn't know I was in town, had no idea who I was, yeah. like didn't recognize me. So I know I've changed a lot and I know it's been positive for me, but it doesn't completely go away.
Well, in fairness to you, I became familiar with you because you're friends with my friend Michael Malice. And the first time I think I saw you with him, you were having a conversation that didn't really make sense to me. I just didn't understand. I think it was a back and forth. And then I had to look at you and read about it. And I was like mystified because there really is nothing masculine about you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that probably feels the same as people telling you there's nothing bad about you because there right. literally isn't. You
and,
know what
well,
I mean?
And even you saying that, I want to, like, my instinct is to go, well, hold on, let's really get into this. There's
likewise.
So much fat here. Right.
Likewise. I could like, well, there's this and this and this.
Yeah.
And
let's
this.
Not do that. Let's be the champions.
Right. 100%. You know, it's like a struggle. And then it gets into the fact that, okay, so I became known as a trans person online who approaches certain topics from a non-conventional sort of standard because I'm right-leaning politically and you don't have a lot of trans people like that in the public space. So then suddenly I'm like working on camera, which I never set to do, by the way. I made like one video, fell into it, thought 7 people would watch it, 5 being family members. Woke up the next day, there was 100,000 views on it.
Wow.
And then my life's been different ever since. So then suddenly I'm on camera and I'm seeing myself from different angles and I'm getting critiques from people. And then I develop a lot of body issues just based on that.
Yes.
So I've, you know, tinkered with a lot of things with filler and with procedures, and I've gone up and down in weight, and I've gone between periods of, in 2019, I think I got down to like 112 pounds or something because I wasn't eating and I was abusing laxatives.
Yeah.
Which is like so effed. I don't know if I can cuss on here.
You can.
Okay. I was so fucked. Like, yeah. Don't ever do that. Like, they don't actually make you lose weight. It's so insane to think they do. They just dehydrate you. It's horrible.
That is actually one of the points I try to bring up repeatedly because there can be a myriad strategies for weight loss, but that doesn't all mean fat loss. Like when I think anybody thinks I want to lose weight, their idea, if you peel it back, is I want to reduce the amount of fat I have on my body. Very few people are going like, I'd like to lose bone density. I'd like to lose lean tissue. Like these are not yeah. typical. Or, you know, occasionally I will hear like gals want to reduce bloating or get rid of water. And in that case, maybe like a laxative or one of those water pills. Yeah. But really, it's not a strategy for long-term weight loss.
No, and the laxative thing is so unhealthy for you. It got to the point where, I mean, it's not even something I'm like proud to talk about. It's like it's kind of embarrassing, actually. But when I was abusing laxatives, it was about a year stretch where I was doing it, and it got to the point where when you're like forcing yourself to expel water and waste and whatever, you're also expelling nutrients. And it got to a point where I woke up one day and I like kind of almost fainted. I just woke up and I was like, oh, I'm just so weak from, and I've also always struggled with food. Like I'm so bad with food and temptation and ugh, it's the worst. But then I also had to like just come to terms with the fact that like I will never be perfect and I have to get off of this train of achieving some sort of perfection. And I think that that's also where plastic surgery gets in the mix. It's like part of you believes you can when you start doing surgeries and stuff. So it's hard working on camera and you'll internalize one negative comment about one small thing about you and your mind will ignore. You could have like literally thousands of comments being like, you're hot, you're pretty, you're beautiful, you're skinny. And then one person's like, you're fat and ugly. And it's like, well,
that's the
I'm
one.
A fat, ugly bitch then.
Yeah.
Because this one person from Wyoming said so.
Yeah. Now I'm very good at not engaging in negativity online. I generally will ignore it. However, that said, I have the same experience as you where 400 comments of like, thank you for showing me that this can be done. And that feels great. And I appreciate that so much. But like one guy writes, did you gain weight or something, even if it's not mean, and that will hang me up. Like, what about this picture? Looks like I gained weight. Like, you know,
right.
like, and it's just because it's haunting.
Yeah. And then if you want to get even more in the weeds about it, so people will compliment girls now by saying like, oh, you're looking thick, or you're getting thick, or she's thick, or whatever, which in their mind, they're really just talking about, I don't know, like your ass or whatever. But when people say that to me, I'm like, oh, I'm getting round everywhere. Great. So it's like even stuff that can be perceived as a compliment. Like when you have that thing that you and I have, you can twist it to a negative, which really sucks.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Also, like, I think I got addicted to working out for a while, which people don't talk about that because working out is, it's a net positive almost always. Only in the rare instances can it be a negative. But it got to be a negative for me. And this is in 2019 when I was also abusing laxatives, where I would wake up, do like an hour and a half of really hard cardio, get back, and where a normal person would be like, oh my God, that was such a good workout. I'm set for the day. I can maybe even like eat what I want to eat or whatever. I'd be like, that wasn't enough. Yeah. And I'd have to go back. And I was wearing myself down. But what sucks also is like I was getting so many compliments like, you look so skinny. You look so great. I was like, fuck.
And you're like, I want, give me more. I'll
yeah,
do that.
Yeah,
what's,
yeah.
What's the strategy to keep that coming?
Yeah. I was also wondering on your end. So I was watching like your episode of Rogan on the plane here and just different interviews you've done. And there's definitely a narrative when you search up your name on YouTube, and your narrative is definitely your body transformation. That's like a big one for you.
Yeah.
Obviously, your amazing work, obviously. I grew up watching you, by the way, on TV and movies. But that's a big one people are really focused on. Does that ever bother you as well? Even though you're so open about it, that like it's kind of like your thing to talk about body now. Does that ever trigger that for you?
No. I basically, prior to that, I started doing Twitter a little bit in like 2008, and then got so sick of it and found Twitter to be like really not healthy for me. And so I just didn't really participate for a long time. And then I got Instagram a couple of years ago, specifically for a TV show I was doing, and posted like 4 pictures on that, and then was like kind of disinterested in that too. And so my presence in social media is just this. It's not talking about work in movies. It's talking about weight loss, and more so even than weight loss, I think this idea of setting a goal and achieving a goal, because, you know, I think weight loss is a little too vague sometimes. It could be very helpful to somebody who needs to lose massive weight loss, but I want to get more specific with it. So it really ultimately serves me in keeping me accountable and on track and focused. And like, so I'm happy to talk about it. And you know, we arrive at today when I have 4 movies coming out and I don't really want to talk about any of them. I'd rather talk about body stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense to me. Because I know for me sometimes, like, one of the reasons why I have the career I have is I talk about trans stuff. That's like a big thing. And normally it's fine. And I'm happy to talk about it. Today I'm very happy to talk about it. Love it. But sometimes it just like, you just get this reminder and it helps that shadow creep in. It's like just always like, wake up, talk about trans shit. Go to bed, wake up, talk about trans shit. It's like, damn, like it does make you realize that it's never ever going to go away, the body stuff.
Yeah.
And but I think I'm the healthiest with it that I've now than I have been in years. Like I've learned that people, even though like comments maybe about your looks, positive or negative, I'm starting to realize that people do, for the most part, the overwhelming majority care about me because of this, because of talking, because of my thoughts on things, because of my opinions on the world. And that I think has helped a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's really important too, what you're doing in that space, what I'm trying to do, hopefully I'm doing and approaching it in this space, is anybody out there who's thinking about this and not acting on it for whatever reason, because they're scared or they're intimidated or they don't know the answer to some of this, I want to talk about it in a way where it's like the good, the bad, and the ugly. Here's what my experience was. Do you know what I mean? And I think that that's what you do. That's what I've seen you do. And it's very, very helpful, I think, to anybody who's got this impulse, got this feeling, but doesn't know what to do, has no outlet, has no motivational person, has no voice. there's a lot of, well, first with weight loss and me and the kind of mental baggage that I created by way of growing up and living the life that I lived, I do believe it will be a lifelong thing. I don't believe there's any finish line. I think there's a thousand finish lines that just present my entire life to me, right? And so I don't think I'm ever out of the woods.
I don't think so either. And for not even just trans women, but like women and men who get plastic surgery and stuff like that, that's what you have to be so aware of. It's so easy to go so far with it. And the other thing is there's a really big rush that you get when you do surgery, as an example. It's crazy because when you get surgery, people talk about this. Did you have weight loss surgery or just?
I had skin removal surgery.
Okay.
So I think I technically lowered my weight in doing that because they took skin off of my body. But I woke up from that surgery weighing more and then proceeded to gain weight. So I never had a surgery that actually resulted in weight loss.
Oh, okay. Well, then just tell me if I get too off topic here, but just speaking of body image and like surgery and stuff, what happens is people talk a lot about post-surgery depression. So I've actually only had one surgery, just had multiple procedures. But you get this really, really dark wave of depression afterwards. So I actually gained a lot of weight after I transitioned because I was posted up in bed healing and because you don't do a lot after surgery, so you gain weight. That was the start of my body issues relating to like weight and thickness rather than just gender. But then you also get this crazy high after the depression. You go really, really low, then you go really, really high. And it's so easy to get addicted to that. It's like doing a drug. So you see like—
And this is separate from the pharmacological experience of like painkillers or anti-anxiety meds.
Yeah, it's not like a high, like you're like out of it. It's more of like you get so happy.
Right.
You get, because all of a sudden you're seeing these changes and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I did this. And so people get so addicted to that. You see like episodes of Botched where people, you think like, how did this person get to the point where they have no nose or their breasts are like three times the size of their head? Like it's, but having done plastic surgery, I know exactly how they get to that point, because if I didn't have like a strong support system around me and if I wasn't like as grounded as I like to believe I am, I think I obviously could have been just like them, because you get like this really weird rush from it that you don't get from anything else. Yeah. And I've done DMT. I've done a lot of stuff
right. That
you get highs from, and it's nothing like plastic surgery. Yeah. I'm like almost fiending for it right now talking about it.
Right. Let me get in that doctor's office.
I am in LA, so maybe I can make a pit stop now.
Yeah. I'm a recovering drug addict, and so my experience with surgery was how strong a meds can I convince the doctor to give me?
Oh.
And I always have to announce, like, I'm an addict, like, you shouldn't give me this stuff. But if this is going to be real painful. Well, it got so bad that like the last two surgeries I've had no opiates while under anesthesia, and I've had to have them sign stuff saying they wouldn't give me opiates when I woke up asking for them, because
that's
what I do. But when you talk about a high, a post-surgical high, I'm like, yeah, let's get some of that oxycodone, some of that fentanyl, and that's that. But it sounds like it's something totally different.
Yeah. So I like really messed up with my the meds I got after surgery, because I was like so out of it from the surgery, I didn't realize you take them at different times. So like I would wake up and take every pill they prescribed me at once. So like the pain was horrible from the surgery. It was the worst thing I've ever felt, but it was still so muted from what it could have been, because I was just so messed up on drugs. It was crazy. But I have that addict thing in me too, which is why I'm very careful, because I was the only person in my immediate family to not be addicted to drugs.
Yeah.
So I grew up around that. I'm very aware of it. Like I'm that person who I avoid drinking if I can.
Yeah.
I avoid any and all drugs if I can, because I've seen what that does to people. So
yeah. How do you maintain your figure now? Like, are you specific with your diet, specific with exercise? What is your strategy now?
I've found this new balance of being fit without being obsessive, that was my problem, is I was so obsessive with the working out. And I think it's because I'm so bad with food that I got so obsessed with working out and with abusing laxatives, which is disgusting. because I knew I couldn't control the foods, I'm like, well, let me like control it with the working out. I have a new balance where I work out almost every day, probably like 5 to 6 times a week. I just do decently heavy cardio, like 45 minutes to an hour of cardio. Then I'll do like some arms to make sure I'm toned and stuff like that. But I don't let myself get too into it because I know what that results in for me. And then with food, that's something I cannot get a hold of the food thing. So I don't know. I feel bad not being able to say like, this is what I do and this is my regimen.
No, I mean, that's great. I think that
I had cake last night and I remember thinking like, okay, I'm going to wake up and do the podcast. I don't want to be like bloated or like whatever. But then I ended up ordering cake. So. Who Postmates cake?
Right, yeah, I was going to ask you, where do you buy cake? It wasn't a birthday party?
I Postmated it to my hotel room just here in LA. I'm like, I'm in a hotel room by myself. No one can hold me accountable. I'm just going to Postmates cake.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, if I'm honest, because I'm not still over my body issues, I haven't eaten yet today. I'm like, well, let me not eat the rest of the day.
You're still thinking you're burning the calories from the cake. That's still fueling you.
Yeah. I'm like, how much am I burning from sitting here talking? Hopefully
right.
a lot.
Right. Yeah. It's a little warm in here. We could be burning extra
Yeah, I'm melting a little bit. It's fine. But that's just the point, though. It doesn't go away. You just have to fight every day for a balance for it. And yeah. I'm still kind of finding it.
And you think that, I mean, I don't want to phrase it that way. Do you think that there is a tipping point where you can clearly be in the mode of winning the fight so that, you know, because there's a point where this kind of stuff could be overwhelming and like shut a person down.
Yeah.
You know, and then I think I've gotten to a point, it sounds like you've gotten to a point where whatever success you've had in winning, you get to the point where you're almost just like riding the wave and you're going like, okay, that shit's going to come up. It's unavoidable. Maybe it's lifelong. If not, I'm going to prepare for it to be so. And I have some tools to brush it off when it comes and it envelops me.
Yes. And I'll give you my answer for both the gender stuff and the weight stuff because okay. there's two different answers. I don't know how many of your listeners are struggling with the gender stuff, but I'll tell them my answer anyways.
I want to hear it. It's fascinating.
Yeah. So I get that like every 3 months shadow we talked about that creeps in with my gender and I'll be looking in the mirror and I know I'll see stuff that I don't see. Like the fact that I can look in a mirror and see a flat chest when I objectively don't have a flat chest is there's clearly something in the mind with that. I'll completely give myself the day off when I feel that because I know there's nothing I can do. I have to just ride it out like a wave, but I only give myself a day.
Right.
And I tell myself, like, tomorrow, even if there's a little remnant still left, you just have to be a bad bitch and go out and kill it. You cannot just sit there and let it envelop you. And then I also have a fiance that talks to me and kind of like, I'll be like, so am I crazy for feeling like I have no boobs today? And he's like, yeah, you're fucking nuts. Like, that's crazy. So I think having someone that can kind of fill you back in on reality because it disappears when you're in that mode. Is important and also limiting the amount of time, setting aside time that I'm going to feel this, I'm going to let myself feel it, and then I'm done. With the weight stuff, I think that for me, it's about remembering that your worth is so much more than just what you look like.
Right.
It's about remembering like, okay, so people are listening to me talk for a living. So clearly my brain matters too. And to what extent does my body matter in comparison to my mind? Probably not a lot if we're honest, because I don't think I'd have the job I have if I was just like an idiot or had nothing interesting to say. Remembering that there's other parts of your life that are more important than how you look. And because also remembering like there's been times where I was at like my best with my body, where everywhere I went, I was getting compliments and I felt great and I looked great. And I still remember feeling that like shadow.
Yeah.
So the fact that I could still feel that and still feel the urge to starve myself or still feel the urge to abuse a laxative or still feel the urge to obsessively work out, even at my like peak body, that's how I know it's not real. So it's just doing whatever you can to like remember that it's not fucking real.
Yeah.
And also that like on a deeper level, this might be too deep for the podcast. I don't know.
No, let's do it.
Okay. So I did DMT recently.
Okay.
I did it twice. Have you done...
No.
Psychedelics at all? Okay.
I was so, by the way, I've been to rehab 3 times. I've been a total alleyway drug addict. But the handful of times I smoked pot, I got so freaked out that I got the idea of doing something like DMT or acid or even mushrooms, I thought I would lose my mind. Like, that's how bad pot freaked me out. So
you might completely be right to not try it. Like, I do not advise trying it then. But for me, one of the things that I experienced from doing DMT, I've never done like a hard drug or anything. And to me, at least, I view psychedelics as a bit different because it comes from the earth, found in the human body, whatever. But maybe that's just me making an excuse. But doing DMT, one of the main things you learn and you experience is this out-of-body experience. So when you do DMT, and it sounds crazy if you haven't done it, but you leave your body. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of people think that, or they know that during near-death experiences, the body releases DMT. And that's why people describe the leaving my body thing, going through the tunnel, whatever. You can get that feeling by just doing DMT. And so I did that.
Is that not fucking terrifying?
On paper, it should be. But when you do it, you kind of just let go. And once you let go, it feels great. It's the best feeling ever. I sound like a junkie.
No.
But it feels great. It feels you.
But it's not you're not resigned to death. You're not like, oh, I'm dying and it's okay.
There was a part of me that before I did it, I was like, okay, so if this is like tricking my brain into thinking it's dying, then maybe it might actually shut down.
Right.
And
placebo.
Yeah. Kills you, but luckily, just from looking into it, that doesn't really happen. So, but what I gained personally after doing DMT and feeling that out-of-body experience is like this overwhelming sense of like, this isn't real.
Yeah.
Like we are so much more than, and I don't know if it's about God or an afterlife or whatever. I don't know if I'm sold on either of those things, but I do know that this is just a shell for whatever this existence is and whatever we are, is that this isn't so real. And it's proof that by the fact that I've altered it and I've played with it and I've done different things, you know? So it gave me just a sense of like there's something greater than just like if I'm 120 or 125 pounds or 130 or if my breasts are this size or not or if my nose is this big or not. Like none of that matters.
Yeah, I think I hold the ideas and concepts that you just communicated as beliefs without having
to do DMT.
Well, without having necessarily objectively experienced it for myself or subjectively experienced it for myself. So I think largely that whether we're going to go like dialectical materialism or super spiritual or either side, no matter what, I am experiencing all of this from my perspective, which is just whatever I make it out to be. And so it all kind of exists in my head no matter what. And whether that is literally in my brain or in a soul that's in my brain or in some other alternate universe, whatever it is, I kind of like the idea of this shit is here and how I react to it is up to me. And it's all kind of meaningless. Is that sad?
100%. No, because I think that there's like a certain freedom that can be achieved through understanding that. It's like, oh, so then if it doesn't really matter, then I'm free to live this life how I want and have fun and be myself and just get rid of all the things that, you know, your conditions to have to need or want or get value from.
And we ultimately have control. We can determine I love having conversations with my kids where they come to me and they're like, this thing is terrible. And I'm like, let's discuss how terrible it is. And you can get to a point where you talk about how terrible something is for so long that you kind of go like, it's not so bad. Maybe it's wonderful. And you can start to go over into that area of like, now let's try to find wonderful things about this thing that you hate and watch a person go from here's my initial reaction to if I try to think about it a different way, I can have a different experience with it. And that I find so powerful that I can experience things differently based on my mood or what I had to eat the night before, or how much sleep I had. And if that's the case, then it really is all just in my head, you know?
Yes.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
And it also is a lesson in just not taking life or yourself too seriously also, because some of my best memories And funniest memories and memories where I bonded the most with the people around me are like when you like went through something annoying or bad or had food poisoning that time you're on your way to Six Flags or, you know, something didn't go as planned and like it sucked in the moment, but you have a funny story. And that's kind of like what life is. Before I forget, the other thing I want to say about that has helped me, because I think this is valuable as well, like not place so much value in like my body, is that understanding that I don't value other people's bodies like that.
Yeah.
Like I don't look at my fiance or my friends and be like, well, 2 pounds heavier, even 10 pounds heavier.
By the way, this is a super tough one for me because I go to the gym and I cannot help but look at dudes and go like, that guy's got the perfect traps. You know, that guy, look at the V shape of his lats. I can't help it. I don't do that to women, but to men, I cannot help but do that.
But they look at you the same way. For real. That's what you learn. Like, because I am friends with a lot of people in the fitness industry, and I have a lot of friends in the trans community, and comparing yourself to other people that are kind of like all the same as you. So for you, other men, me, other trans women or women, like it's such a natural thing, but they're doing it back is what people don't really process. It's the same way I can maybe feel a slight bit of intimidation in my heart if I see like another trans woman or another woman and see maybe like what I think is ideal or perfect about them. They're doing the same back. So,
and I will say for me, I can admire, a dude's traps in the same way that I admire like Stavros Halkias's confidence, who he's a guy who's got a gut and he does a nude catalog, calendar. And like he has so much confidence that like, I'm like, I want that too. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it isn't all just strictly literal aesthetics. It's also how it's presented and with the confidence it's presented. Jack Black walks around with his shirt off.
Yeah.
And like, you know, if I look like him, I don't believe I could confidently walk around with my shirt off. I can't confidently walk around with my shirt off now. Jack Black's got a giant gut. And so much confidence, and you're just like, yeah, dude, fucking go. You're killing it.
You know? And you don't look at him and place a value judgment that's negative.
Not
or
at
be
all.
Maybe some people look at that and say, ew, but they're assholes. And then also, that thing that you and I have that makes us never completely confident or always go back to that and have that shadow creeping in. Like what you have to understand is these people that look perfect and that meet those like aesthetic standards that you feel are top tier or whatever, they all feel it too. Like when you're at the gym and there's like just the baddest bitch ever that you see and like she looks like she could snap you in half and she's just so built, she's feeling these feelings of insecurity too, most likely, especially people who really work very hard at striving to have an aesthetic like that. They have that bug and that's what puts them there.
Yeah.
It's like people don't get to the point of like.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Growing up as a kid, my mom would never let us have real cereal. When I say real cereal, I mean the stuff that you'd find at a normal grocery store. My mom would get us the cardboard shavings at the health food store, and I was always miserable with my cereal. And then I would magically go to my friend's house, and they would have real cereal. And I would be so envious, and I would sit and eat bowl after bowl of delicious, frosted goodness, sugary, wonderful stuff. And then I grew up and I was able to buy my own cereal, but that lasted all of 2 minutes because then I started dieting. So cereal left my life entirely. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Now there's Magic Spoon, which is high protein cereal. My favorite flavor is their peanut butter. It's incredible. Variety pack. Four flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free. It's incredible. Go to magicspoon.com/glutton and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GLUTTON at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/glutton and use the code GLUTTON to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
I don't know, like, who has, like, just, like, a crazy perfect aesthetic? Like, I don't know, like, Bradley Martin, like, super jacked guy, bodybuilder, whatever, powerlifter, like, I know, like, I haven't had this conversation with him. He's a friend, but I haven't talked about it. I know he probably is driven by in some form of feeling, like, inferior with the way he looks. You have to be to achieve that level of aesthetic. So right. They all have it. It's not just you who is feeling that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're, I mean, it's also, I think, borne out in truth of what you're saying because they're there at the gym always trying to improve themselves.
Yeah. If they're there at 8 a.m. just like you, they have that bug too.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. That's something to keep in mind. I do occasionally have people say to me, like, I want to achieve what you've achieved. And I'm like, me? Look at these 40 guys I follow on Instagram. They're killing it. I'm not right. Killing it. But I wouldn't say that just because I want people to go after what they want to go after.
It's the same with me. Like, I'll have trans people reach out and be like, who is your surgeon or how did you get to this point or how did you do that? And I'm like, you want to look like me or you want to do what I've done? I'm like, okay. So I obviously always help out because you have to. I mean, I feel like that's kind of a responsibility almost for me. But I'm like, okay, well, that reminds me that the way I'm – that's the other thing. I know in my heart and in my mind that the way people see me is not the way I see myself.
Yeah.
I know it because – there's certain compliments I'll get, and it might be the thing I'm most insecure about, but it's like sometimes it'll be like an overwhelming consensus. Just thousands of people say it online, and I'm like, well, then I can't see myself the way I really am. If all these people think this about me is attractive, if I'm feeling like it's not, well, then maybe I'm just wrong.
Right, or we are wrong on what is attractive. Like,
that's the other thing.
Right, like, how the fuck do I know?
Yeah, everyone has different, like, standards, like... And that's probably based on the fact that, like, you know, like, you're attracted to women, you wouldn't want to be with you. But, like, you don't know what someone who's attracted to men likes.
Yeah.
Same with me, vice versa.
Yeah. It is a vicious, like, the human mind is so fascinating. And I think, like, that we evolved so long in such a specific way of, like, having to physically work for survival at every turn. And then we kind of open our eyes in a blink and go through this huge industrial revolution and now this technological revolution. And, you know, life is for all intents and purposes much, much easier because we don't have to struggle in as literal terms to survive. We don't have to use our bodies. And so now we have so much more to think about and thinking about thought and how we react. And it's all just so crazy. Like if we were in the jungle and a lion jumped out at us, we're going to have a reaction. It's going to be fight or flight. Like there's not going to be time to sit there and go like, how should I react to that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But having a car, having a podcast, trying to figure out how to talk about weight loss failure for 20 years. You know what I mean? Like, this is a crazy thing to even be thinking about.
Yeah.
You know?
Actually, yeah. It's making me think of, like, all the things that I have made a living talking about for years. And it's like, whoa, like, that's never even mattered until, like, 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. And it's like the epitome of first world problems in a way. It's like shit's so easy that all of a sudden, like, transgender, like, what the fuck is that? Like, 50 years ago, what the fuck is that? But that reinforces the idea that none of it's real.
Yeah. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, I don't think with transgender, I think that's a different thing. But, like, with the non-binary stuff, I grew up punk rock. I identified as punk rock. If somebody had called me a Hesher, it would have crushed me. It would have been totally catastrophically upsetting to me because right. I was punk rock right. and that was different than the heavy metal kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I had a mohawk. I didn't have long hair. This is should be obvious to everyone that I'm not a Hesher. But now where there's this thing of like, I want to opt out, fine. I was punk rock. I was opting out clearly. But I don't know about how to reinvent this category. Like I have trouble bringing my mind around to understanding, trying to get somebody else to acknowledge that I'm punk rock if they want to call me a Hesher. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I completely relate to that. So the non-binary thing, it's like it on paper, if you're going just based on where I'm supposed to be with social attitudes and whatever, like I should be relating to that to some extent, right?
Well, I
should be.
I don't even understand how trans relates to it because
it doesn't.
Yeah. Isn't there an if I say anything offensive, tell me.
I'm completely open. Like you can say or missay anything. Okay. You're all good.
If trans is about the two sexes.
100%.
That's like
that's the historical precedent. That is the biological precedent, the scientific precedent. It's been our understanding of what trans is for a very long time.
And
so I made the joke earlier, like, oh, trans 50 years ago, what the fuck was that? That was a joke. It really was around back then.
Sure.
People couldn't necessarily achieve maybe what I or other trans women could now through science and surgery and all that. But people uncomfortable with their biological sex has been around. It's a phenomenon that's always existed throughout history, and history's treated them differently based on which society. Like there are some societies where like people viewed them as gods to an extent, and they like had a certain status and they were seen as something different than just man or woman. But but it is about like a biological male who feels like who feels like a female or vice versa.
Right.
And in the last few years, literally 2015 was the first time that if you Google it, the word non-binary in the context of gender was actually ever even used. Like it just flat out was not used. It's a new concept. You see the trends and it goes up and up and up in 2015
and
before
this is
that flatline.
Opting out of gender.
It's opting out of gender, but it's also, to me, doesn't make sense because you're still trying to be included in the conversation of gender. And you're still trying to insist that people who are trans are under, or that it's under the umbrella of trans, which.
But trans to me seems very much about a binary.
Yeah, it's very specific. It's very much about a binary. And it is for most trans people. And I've personally never met any trans people who see themselves as non-binary, but I've met non-binary people who see themselves as trans because I think there's a certain, in some way, certain benefit to having that label these days, if we're being honest. I mean, I'm highly aware of it. I don't think I'd have the career I did if I wasn't trans. It's an entryway for many people, and it's interesting to a lot of people, and I've literally capitalized off of it. I don't have any problem saying that. It is what it is. I don't relate to the non-binary conversation at all. But what's frustrating is, like, I don't have to relate to something to be okay with it, right? Like,
yeah, no, this is not a judgment or me saying I'm not okay with it. It is really more about, listen, and I'm fucking old. I'm going to be a grandfather in April. I'm an old guy.
Wow. I feel old too at 28. I don't understand half of it.
Yeah, and so it's more like I am for sure okay with anybody expressing themselves in any way they want to express themselves. I think the invention of a new idea that is then forced on others, you must have this idea with me, that I have some trouble with.
Yeah.
But you know.
Do you, but also don't force me to be included in the same label as you. Same way you're like punk, but not goth. It's like I transitioned from male to female. I'm not some third gender, some 72nd gender. I'm not genderless. Like, it's a very specific thing. And also, the reason why I'm so adamant about not being lumped in with non-binary is because it decreases society's understanding of people like me, which in reality, you know, I live a great life, but there are a lot of people like me who don't. And it requires society figuring out what the hell's going on with people like me. And you can't do that when you muddy the waters by, I'll just say it, lying that there's no such thing as biological sex, or lying that there are more than two genders. The reality is you can opt out of the concept of gender, and that can be how you see yourself, but you don't get to change it for the rest of the world. You don't get to redefine how everyone else sees sex and gender, because there are scientific realities and biological realities to these concepts.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Yeah, I had a friend who was like, they changed the definition of some of these pronouns, and I had to push back and go, when something has been sexually ambiguous in the past, we've always used they and them, if we didn't know.
Right, like if someone's at a distance and you couldn't tell, it's like that them over there kind of thing, yeah.
Or like my kid comes home and says, my teacher was mean to me, and I say, what did they do? Because
you don't know yet.
I don't know what teacher could be masculine or feminine. I have no idea. So they and them as a ambiguous single person pronoun has always existed. But if you're putting forward the culturally normal associated things like a long hair and a dress that has been associated with femininity, then the assumption that you're feminine is what I'm going to make. And if you tell me I'm doing violence, I just don't. This is something that gets so complicated for me to try and understand.
Yeah. And what sucks is that it complicates what would otherwise be a pretty simple thing, right? So your brain, when you see a human being, your brain subconsciously registers male or female. Every human being you see, your brain will do that. It's not like it's a conscious thing. So when people talk about misgendering, it's like, well, it would be a little ridiculous if I sat before you and I was like, you have to call me he.
I couldn't do it.
Exactly.
I would have to try, like, it would be hard to do.
It would be an effort every time you spoke to me or of me, right? And so I think that it's unhealthy to set yourself up to have this adversarial relationship with life where you are someone who's presenting completely as a woman, but you decide, like, I only want they, them, and I only want male pronouns when you look like a woman. It's like, well, you can do that.
But maybe do the job of dumbing down your gender more. You know what I mean? Like, there are certainly people who I've come into contact with and not known.
Yeah, same.
Is that a guy or a girl? And in that case, they works for me. You know, I don't know. It's very complicated.
Yeah, and it sucks because, you know, statistically, LGBT acceptance has actually been going down recently for the first time in years, about a decade.
Is that true?
Yeah. And I think it's because things are just getting overly complicated and people are seeing things like biologically male athletes going and just like destroying female competitors in sports. They're seeing, you know, 10 and 11 year olds going on drugs that are going to permanently alter their bodies for the rest of their lives. And you're seeing this sort of...
The drugs thing is tricky. Yeah. And I don't know. I think there's a conversation about drugs for America and how much drugs we take. But like, I know if hormones are popular now, when I was a kid, or not really when I was a kid, when my older kids were young, Ritalin and Adderall were like every kid in school
was
on these things. Doesn't that have some – and yes. Maybe it has no effect long term, but I think doing stuff like that, because I've only done – Adderall recreationally, that's a very strong drug. Like if you can't get your hands on cocaine or speed and you get some Adderall, you can have a good night, you know?
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, like kids being overprescribed is a huge problem. We can get into conversations about big pharma.
Yeah, we don't seem to back off from giving kids drugs in America.
Right. But what's so sad is that in part of this trans issue becoming such a craze and such a social contagion to where it's just on everyone's minds at all times, and admittedly, I've profited from it, right? I've capitalized off of it because it's a thing. There is this, like, lackadaisical attitude towards sterilizing kids and towards medicalizing kids without understanding that, like, in case anyone's not aware, like, I'm on estrogen for the rest of my life. My body does not create it naturally because I'm biologically male. I'm on these drugs forever. Why are you signing kids up for that at 12, 13 years old? Why are you interrupting their normal development because right now they feel this way? The same way that, like, you were a punk kid, that I had trends I went through, like, I was a little emo kid. It's like those come and go. And people want to act like gender is so different, but not really for kids. Like, kids latch onto things very easily and it multiplies in friend groups. So they're in the UK, at least, where a lot of these studies are going on, because they are even kind of further along than we are in understanding what's happening, is that there has been a 4,000% increase in young underage girls identifying as trans. This is abnormal for multiple reasons. And we're talking 11, 12, 13-year-olds, like preteens, for multiple reasons. One could say, oh, we attribute that to there's more acceptance for trans people. Okay, maybe that accounts for some of it, but 4,000%, I don't really think so. I think that it's a trend. I think it's popular. I think the fact that you're seeing it in a population that historically you didn't see it in. So gender dysphoria is something that historically in the DSM has affected primarily young boys. It's not something we saw. Of course, there's always biological females that experienced it, but it's not as common. It was always heavily slanted towards something that young boys can feel. For there to be a 4,000% increase among girls is strange, especially among the population that you also see cutting, that you also see eating disorders very young. And you're seeing it multiply in friend groups, which is also odd because gender dysphoria and being trans is something that's been present historically in like 0.01% of the population. Very tiny. So when you're seeing it among friend groups, like, there's no reason why there should be four girls in a friend group of 10 that are experiencing this. But you're seeing this.
Right.
So
what's the solution? Because I, as a kid, told my mom I was a pirate, you know, and I felt very strongly about that.
I was a Power Ranger.
I don't know that that's the same. However, I think kids, you know— we have to be totally responsible for them to a degree, to an extent. And then they take over. Like, you know, a kid can't get a tattoo. That's a permanent thing in America. But at the same time, like, I know the way I felt as a kid about myself was so horrible. If there was some path to feeling better about myself, I wish I had been on it. I still don't know what that path is today. So I don't know that right. I have a solution, but what is the solution?
So it's so deeply complicated, and this is such a human issue because, like I said, this gender dysphoria phenomenon is something that's been observed throughout history. And so it's so hard to, like, narrow it down to what is the solution, because I know trans people that transitioned at 12 and are happy. And I also have thousands of people a month reaching out saying, I transitioned at 15, I'm now 19, I made the worst decision of my life.
Oh, wow.
I've interviewed these kids on my channel. There are teenagers these days coming up. And if you look up the word detransitioner on YouTube, it's nothing but late teens to early 20s kids who are talking about how they removed their breasts, or they're permanently sterile, or their voice is permanently altered because they went on these drugs at 12 or 13 and realizing, like, oh yeah, it was just a phase. But my parents were so gung-ho on affirming this at such a young age that I've now permanently ruined my life.
Right.
And that has got to be, as someone who is coming from the place of having been so happy with my decision, I can only imagine the opposite, to where, like, I went through all this.
And, like, I'm not happy with
right. it. Like, right. Like, I couldn't go back right now if I wanted to, but imagine if I suddenly felt like I had to. That must be, just the worst form of, like, existential dread.
Yeah. And even when I try to relate to it in the only way I can, at the end of the day, if I ever am dissatisfied with myself, I can always just eat more. I can always fall back into my old habits. You know what I mean? Like, I will get that back, no problem.
Right. But if I were to... there's no switch where I could be you, basically. You know what I mean? There's no switch right now where I could live a life as a man all of a sudden. Like, maybe I could try. Maybe I could I don't even know. Regardless.
You have no shot at it today.
Right. So I feel for these kids, and I'm, for whatever reason, this is such a taboo topic among the trans community. I'm really one of the only trans influencers, for lack of a better word, I hate that word, that's willing to like platform them and talk to them.
I have another question.
Yeah.
And again, if this is, if I say something inappropriate,
go in.
Tell me. When I was young, and I would do a lot of drugs. My favorite place in New York was a place called Stingy Lulu's. Did you ever hear of Stingy Lulu's? No, it's not been there for 25 years or 30 years or something. But it was right off Tompkins Square Park, and you could go and buy drugs at any bodega that faced Tompkins Square Park, and then you go to Stingy Lulu's. Stingy Lulu's, I don't know that trans sexual was a thing I'd ever heard of back then, but there were transvestites. Is this a bad word to say?
Depends who you ask.
So I'm not saying it. I'm only saying it because this is what this is what they called themselves.
Yeah. When I was first kind of, I totally get that because my mom, when I first came out as trans, she was like a transvestite because that was the word that was used back then.
So I know it's archaic now, but this was the most fun group of people on earth. There was no more fun group of people. They had a restaurant, and every 15 minutes they would all sing and stand on the tables and sing, and it was the best party. And it was just a restaurant called Stingy Lulu's. My perception now is that it's become way more conservative.
So
it's very stuffy almost.
Yeah. It's because there is a certain freedom you achieve when you understand that you're on the fringes of society, right? Like, and I see this in a lot of like my trans friends. It's like there's a certain like, well, society's fucked. My life's fucked. I'm good. Let's just have fun, right? Yeah. So yeah, I totally get that. There's a certain element to that. And now the topic is so like,
it's almost academic and like,
yeah. And there's a certain importance to understanding these issues on an academic level, but there's also like at a certain point, people are like just people.
Right.
And, you know, there is a certain culture, like the trans community has a culture. Like there's a very specific thing. We have certain words we use. We have certain parties we host. We do certain things. And that definitely is changing, not just from like, people on the right who don't understand it at all, but also from people on the left who are turning it into this like fad or this trend. It's neither one of these political factions get it right to any extent, and they really water it down in their own different ways, right? So the left will like, I often say like, speaking back on the pronoun thing, I was having this conversation with Michael Malice actually. He sent me this article from this like Hollywood actor who the headline was like, Love Simon actor comes out as trans and his pronouns are tree and tree self. Pause. And I was like, you know, the left makes trans more of a joke than the right ever could, because the right will joke that like, oh, what are your pronouns? Tree. The left really does it. Like they really do have tree pronouns or kitten pronouns and shit, you know? So no one gets it right. And there's a certain freedom to understanding that like all these people around you are kind of just idiots about it and you can just be your fucking self. So I get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But my mom used that word too, the transvestite word. It's an old word, but.
So I guess my question is that group that was that word is now trans. Trans encompasses all of that.
Well, so there's cross-dressers, which are typically like those are like transvestites. So like, but it's hard because I don't know the people you were with. So I don't know, like, were they medically transitioning? Were they not? Like, cause that does change things. You know what
I
mean?
I don't think that was nearly as common in the early 90s. Was it?
Right. No, it wasn't. It was a black market thing back then.
Right.
In fact, so being like in 2022 now, and like I live the life I do, like sometimes I'm a little ignorant to like trans history and like the people who came before me and like the struggle and like what it really meant to transition in the 90s, which might have been nothing or might have been taking black market pills. Michael Malice actually is the one who's teaching me about all of it because he's basically a historian, and he knows all this shit about, he's like, you don't even know your history, bitch. I'm like, I guess I don't. Because he is introducing me to like these, this person named Candy Darling from like the 60s, and she was a Warhol muse. And she died because she was taking black market estrogen pills. Or people theorize that's one of the reasons. I don't want to say definitively, but basically she was taking these, what were described as rather large eyedrop-shaped black pills.
Oh, my God.
And she believed that that was estrogen. Was it? Who knows? But it was black market. And then she ended up getting, like, cancer and dying from it, as theorized. And so, you know, I really do benefit from the fact that bitches before me were taking black market pills and dying from it. And then we learned what it really needed to be. And so it has progressed. So back then, like, maybe it was just crossdressers who called themselves transvestites. Who knows?
Right.
But that's...
But so that is still a thing. Crossdressing is still a thing?
Yeah, but that's more of a sexual thing, like a fetish thing.
Right.
So there's like men who dress up as women and that's like their thing. Like they're into like wearing women's underwear and like clothes and like they get off from it. Whereas for me, it has literally nothing to do with sexuality. Yeah. Like it had only to do with myself, which is why I felt it, you know, at 4 or 5. It's like you don't have a sexuality at 4 or 5. So.
Yeah, these are very, very different things, yeah. I think.
But people get that misconstrued, though. But what sucks is, like, it's totally okay to, like, not know. But people get attacked for asking questions these days. So I understand, like, even your trepidation and, like, I don't want to ask the wrong question. But also, like, that's what's frustrating. And that's why I speak out against some of the more, like, radical activists who make it this very heated, like, contentious thing. It's like, I don't want people to feel like they have to walk around eggshells around me. I want people to be like, so what is this about? And I can just tell them and we can just move on. Whereas it's such a, you get canceled for anything and everything to do with this topic now. It's like, I think that's one of my main goals in doing what I do is just try to bring it to like a more centered place.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's also the, like, look, language evolves. And mm-hmm. so if there's going to be a new batch of genders. If that happens.
It's like a new album, like right, a new like, drop.
If we evolve to the point where we need different language, if we're going to start identifying shades of this or whatever, I think it should, or, you know, I don't even like the word should, but I would think a better way of doing it would be like to just use that language and then politely ask people to use that language and not imagine that everybody's figured it out in 2 years.
The problem is there's new language once a week, basically, right?
It's evolving very quickly.
Very quickly. And
do you think that that's because a lot of existence is now happening in a virtual place?
Yes.
Where, you know, even I remember when my kids first had phones, I felt like their grammar, they were using different words. Mm-hmm. Like the first time I saw LOL, I was like, I don't understand this, but that was language, right? And so language does evolve, but now it's so fast.
Right. And just the fact that I can't keep up with it and I am trans should be evidence that like most people have no idea what's going on. And most people just kind of go along with it because they understand that they have to. Right? Most people, it's like, you can't be in a regular workplace and question these things. It's like, you almost have to do what I do or do what you do. It's like, you almost have to be your own boss to even have these conversations because you just can't have them. I'm very empathetic towards people who cannot keep up because I can't. And I'm empathetic towards people that look at things like trans people in sports and they're like, I don't know if that's right. Looking at 12-year-olds. Sterilizing themselves. I don't know if that's right.
Right.
You know, it's like, I get it. And I try to sort of be a bridge between the trans community, which is going 180 miles an hour. They're going in one direction and seeing people that are kind of watching that car zoom by and they're like, well, wait a minute. How do I even get on this if I wanted to?
Yeah.
Right. It's hard, but I just try not to be radical about it. That's all.
Yeah.
But because I try not to be radical about it, people say I'm radical, which is so strange. They're like, right. What's wrong with you that you're not like thinking the way we are? It's like, well, I'm my own fucking person.
Yeah.
And also maybe I am getting old. Maybe 28 is like archaic for these people. I don't know. Right. But
you're a boomer now.
Welcome to the club. I really am. Like I was having this conversation the other day and I was talking about kind of like the rapidly changing landscape of like society, whether it's the COVID stuff or the gender stuff or whatever. And I'm like, you know, society is unrecognizable than when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I'm only 28. That's the kind of stuff people say when they're like in their 50s and 60s, like, oh, so the world is just a whole different place. It's like, I'm only 28 and I'm saying that. It shouldn't be that different from when I was growing up, but it is.
Listen, I remember having a green mohawk and not relating at all to my parents, and my parents really making an effort to like understand anything about me, and me just being like, no, dude, you cannot get what's happening. Like, you're so far. And now I'm having that totally with my young kids who listen to, like, you know, mumble rap that's like all about how much psychopharmaceutical drugs they're taking. You know what I mean? They're so excited about Xanax. Like, come on, that's not such an exciting drug. Like,
right. It's the opposite of exciting. Right. You can't feel anything.
It's so boring. And like, I don't know. It doesn't even seem rebellious. It's like you're
like, singing,
you wanna
go
about
to sleep?
Big
I don't
pharma.
Get it.
Right.
Yeah.
This to me is like, you know, Brave New World, basically. But I don't know. I wonder if that's just also a trap of like, and you're feeling it at 28, which is fucking crazy.
Exactly. But that's how I know. I was like, I try to differentiate between like, okay, am I just feeling what everyone feels at a certain age?
Right.
But if it is that thing that everyone just ends up feeling because society's always just going, I probably shouldn't feel at 28. I probably should maybe feel like I'm learning a few things from the next generation, but not like, oh, we're restructuring society on every level.
Right.
Every single level.
Yeah.
It's scary.
It's a total do-over at this point.
It is. It's like, you know, not to, you know, name drop a conspiracy theory, but like, it feels like a great reset. It feels like everything is just kind of like, no, everything's going to be done the exact opposite way it's ever been done. And you're going to like it. And if you don't, peace.
Right. Yeah. Blair, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. And you answered all my questions. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Of course. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee, and as always, joined by my chaperone, Paige Dorian. Follow us on Instagram at American Glutton Podcast. Sincerely.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.